joy to preach when God has touched the person who's singing before you stand up to preach. 1 Peter 5, verse 8. And let me introduce the message as we come to it. On April 28, 1944, during World War II, Allied soldiers were engaged in Operation Tiger, a training exercise in amphibious beach landings in preparation for the D-Day invasion of Normandy. Suddenly, enemy gunboats appeared and killed over 700 American servicemen in a surprise attack. Today, a monument, a Sherman tank, stands on Slapton Sands in Devon in memorial to that. Now, what happened was simply this. They were preparing for the invasion of Normandy. They were getting ready for it, and they were having a training exercise. Of course, the enemy didn't care whether it was a training exercise or not. The enemy saw an opportunity, and the gunboats came in, and they started blasting away. And in the mayhem of the training, the soldiers didn't even know what was happening. And before it was all over and done, 700 men were dead. One of the saddest disasters of Second World War occurred on that day. Now, I'm going to talk to you about our enemy, the enemy of our souls. He knows no rest, and he knows no time that he takes off. And he's never going to give you a day when you can relax and take it easy. Now, we're foolish. We think he does. We think we can take time off. But you know what? We can't. And I think we're in the last of the last days. I think we're coming close to the end. I think the enemy knows that. I don't think he accepts he's the loser yet. I think he's deluded enough to think that somehow he can win in the end. He can pull a stroke and win in the end. And what he's doing is he's doing everything he can to hinder the message of the gospel from going forward. You know, I've just been, we're in this country for just for the past week. That's been exciting. We came for a wedding. The wedding was just a glorious time. One of the men from our church in Dublin, he was actually saved in Arklow. But a man whose life was ruined, destroyed, wrecked, 26 years old, hooked on heroin, without hope, without any possibility of things changing. And God stepped in and changed his life and turned him around completely. And a week from last Friday, he married a pastor's daughter from Falls, Oriel, my son Oriel's sister-in-law. He married, glorious story. I just got word that they're both in church in Lifegate in Dublin this morning, and I'm thrilled. That's exciting. It is exciting to see God. And God does things like that. But what happens for us is we forget there's an enemy. We forget there's an enemy out there that wants to tear us down, that wants to destroy us. And as I've traveled this past week, I've heard story after story of people who are discouraged, people who are broken, people who are worn out with ministry, and the enemy is just working to wear people down. I've seen several missionaries leave the field recently, and I'd like to think it's because God was moving them somewhere else, but in my heart, I know, you know, the reality is they're just worn out. The enemy's been on their case, and they're worn out. And it's not just people in the ministry, it's you as well. And he's looking for that opportunity when he can get in and he can destroy. And unfortunately, foolishly, we give them those opportunities. This morning I want to challenge you to check your life and see where you might be giving them an advantage. To check your life and look and see where in your life there might be a possibility that you're letting the enemy in. Those soldiers on Slapton Beach, on Slapton Sands in Devon, they didn't realize. They didn't think. If they did think about it, they thought it was somebody else's responsibility to watch out for. But 700 of them never made it to the war. They were dead before they got there. Because the enemy took an opportunity. Your enemy will take the opportunity. He watches and he will take the opportunity. Let's read 1 Peter 5:8 and then we'll pray. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about, seeking whom he may devour. Whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. Father, would you bless us this morning, Lord? We know the enemy of our souls would like to tear us down and destroy. And even, Lord, in this meeting, he would like to destroy the good that you have for us. But, Lord, would you bless? would you help? Would you put them far from this place, Lord, and would you hinder them from doing any damage? And Lord, would you bless us that we might hear your sweet voice and that you might work in our hearts and draw us closer to you and give us victory over the enemy. In Jesus' precious name, amen. When it says here, be sober, it's talking about the idea of us being calm and collected in spirit. We're supposed to be on guard, on watch, watching for an enemy who wants to tear us down, who wants to actually get us. He roams about as a roaring lion. And a lion's an interesting creature. Sometimes a lion will go into the herd roaring just to see who's weak, who might be caught in the herd. And he watches all the time. He never gives up. Now, 2 Corinthians 2 verse 11, turn there with me as well and read the verses. 2 Corinthians 2 verse 11 says, lest Satan should get an advantage over us, for we are not ignorant of his devices. But you know what I find in the people of God? We're terribly ignorant of his devices. Now, we shouldn't be. And yet so often we are. So often we live life like we talked in Sunday school without the supernatural element of God. But the other side of it is we live apart from the supernatural element of we have an enemy. Verse 10 there in 2 Corinthians says, to whom ye forgive anything, I forgive also. For if I forgive anything, to whom I forgive it for your sakes, forgive I it in the person of Christ. And then he says, lest Satan should take an advantage over us. Forgiveness is a major issue for us when it comes to the enemy taking advantage over us. But here's the situation. We're the herd. And the roaring lion is stalking the herd, looking for an opportunity to take somebody. That's the reality. Now, he's doing it today. He was doing it yesterday. He's always doing it. And he's not God, and he doesn't know everything, but he does know people. It's amazing. As you get older, you begin to look at people, and you can kind of work out what people are going to do in certain situations because you watch people do those things for so long. It's one of the interesting things of a gray head, that you begin to be able to gauge where people are going to go and what they're going to do. Now, Satan is the master. He's been watching man since the garden. And he knows how they're going to jump. He knows what they're going to do. He knows what you and I are going to do fairly reasonably. And he watches for the opportunity to take and destroy us. And evermore in these last of the last days, right? So let me give you some things that he's watching for in your life and you need to watch for too. First of all, if you harbor unconfessed sin in your heart, Satan will go after you. Doesn't it seem sometimes like, you know, sin is no big deal? We live in such a wicked world that it's okay if we have these things that we do and we're still not like the world, but there's a whole bunch of things that we know we're not right. We know the Spirit of God's not happy with, and yet we're willing to do them. And what we do is we allow sin to work its way into our lives. And what the enemy takes advantage of that. You know, the enemy doesn't want just a little sin in your life. He wants a little sin, and then he wants to push it. And push it all the way. And you know what you find in your life? You find that once you give him an inch, he pushes it and he takes a mile. We have an addictions ministry in our church, and the addictions ministry sees wonderful successes, but it sees the most dramatic failures as well. Because what happens with an addict? An addict comes to the place where there's no hope for them, and there's no hope for them, they have no hope for themselves, and God steps in and God gives them hope. And they latch on to Christ, and it's amazing to watch. One of the sweetest groups of people that I get to preach to in a week is not Christian school when we had a school in the church, but the addicts. You can then sit down with the addicts and open the Bible to them, and they soak it up like sponges. It's wonderful for them, and they're soaking it up. But they are very prone to leaving their guard down with the enemy, and they'll do something dumb, right? They'll let bitterness creep in against somebody in the men's home, maybe one of the staff. They'll leave the men's home. They'll go back to smoking, and smoking's not the worst thing in the world, and yet for an addict, I've never seen an addict survive smoking. Once they're off, they'll go back and they'll smoke. They'll get drawn into immorality, And next of all, you hear they're dead. Honestly, that's what happens. I have been to more funerals since we started an addictions ministry than in the whole time of my ministry before that. Because what happens is they let the enemy get in. And the enemy goes after them and he does it. Now, here's the thing about people like yourself. Most of us have enough character to put some barriers between those things. We make it look better. But you know, the enemy does exactly the same things in our lives. The enemy uses exactly the same plan. You see, if you harbor sin in your life, you're going to be separated from God. There's going to be a distance between you and God. Now, if we were to look at Ephesians chapter 6 and look at the armor, it starts with this: be strong in the Lord. You're never going to be strong in you. You're never going to be a match for the enemy in you. The only hope you have is because you have your Lord right there. Your strength is Him. Your strength is in Him. And when you sin, what happens is you put between you and God. Now, it doesn't matter how small it is. We kind of think that? When I was a Catholic, I was raised in a system where there were venial sins and mortal sins, right? Now, a venial sin was a sin that wouldn't send you to hell. You'd just go to purgatory for that. A mortal sin was a sin that would send you to hell. And everybody was aware what was a venial sin and what was a mortal sin. Now, as Christians, we don't believe that. Or do we? We have some big ticket sins that we think are really bad. And we have some small sins, well, everybody does them, they're no big problem, and we don't worry about them. It's all sin. It's all sin with God. Listen, if your small sin was the only sin in the world, Jesus would still have had to die for you to go to heaven. None of it is small in God's eyes, and none of it's small in the enemy's eyes. You know, the enemy's kind of clever. He doesn't come into you with a big ticket item first off and wave it in your face because you'd say no. You know, our addicts in the men's home, he doesn't come into the men's home and offer them heroin. They'd say no. But he will come in and offer them a cigarette. He will come in and offer them something smaller. And once they've taken that, they'll go further and further and further until it literally destroys them. And he does the same in your life too. And what happens?